What do aliens think of coffee? Do zombies prefer the brains of smart people? Answers to these questions and more on this episode of
This Paranormal Life!
Hello, and welcome back to This Paranormal Life. This is the weekly comedy podcast wherein myself, Kit Greer Mulvenna, and my co-host, Rory Pars, every week we investigate a different paranormal tale and get to the bottom of whether it's truly paranormal or not. How are you doing today, Rory?
I'm doing great. Those were some very good intro questions. I think my input would be that a zombie would like the brains of a dumb person, because a brain is, at the end of the day, a muscle, right?
Mm-hmm.
Is it? Is that right?
I'm nodding, knowing nothing.
So you want someone who, the same way like a cannibal doesn't want to eat someone who's really jacked and muscly, you wouldn't want to eat someone's brains who have been put to work a lot, because it's probably quite tough, probably quite hard to eat. You want a nice little squishy brain, a dum-dum's brain.
I hear what you're saying. You want the beef from the Wagyu cow that's been fed beer and listening to Mozart and getting massages for the last 5 years, not a cow that's been doing CrossFit.
Yeah, exactly. A jacked cow.
That tracks. That makes a lot of sense. Hopefully not something we ever have to find out firsthand. Rory, let's dive into today's investigation. Today's episode is a little bit different. This is a topic we have touched on in the past by way of another investigation, but we had just so many requests from various listeners emailing in who wanted to know the full story that I simply had to cover it.
Wow, this is exciting.
Because in recent years, as more evidence and more publicity has been put on this case, it's been shown to be one of the most intriguing and storied paranormal cases of our time.
Hmm.
Our story begins at 5 p.m., Monday 15th of May, 1989.
Oh my God, so specific. Sometimes I just say a long time ago, but this is good. I like this.
This is 5 seconds past midnight at the Taco Bell on Rodeo Drive.
This is very different from my cases where I sometimes say that time is irrelevant or classified and then refuse to mention when or where the case takes place.
Sometimes we just get the dates wrong.
Oh yeah, there's that too, yeah.
Those are hard to follow. The staff of Las Vegas news channel, KLAS-TV, were all on edge. They were about to break a big story live on TV and the stakes were high. They had a man on the line with secret information from within a secret government facility. Investigative reporter George Knapp was on standby, ready to conduct what was sure to be a career-defining interview to be broadcast to millions.
Okay, commercial's almost done. We're back in 5, 4, 3, 2, go.
KLAS TV news jingle doesn't have to be exactly theirs, but just a kind of like dun 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 dum dum kind of thing. Ideally.
Was that a message to our editor to put that in?
Yep.
Oh, right. Okay. That wasn't just you saying that. I could do it right now if you want.
KLAS.
Las Vegas news.
I said it wasn't a radio station.
That's for television, asshole. They can sound the same. I can go again if you want. What was the name of the
station? I don't want, but I feel like you are so insistent. Please try.
What was the name of the station? KLS?
KLAS TV.
KALAS.
What? Wrong.
KAL, I've been drinking. KLAS TV. Turn up your volume, because this audio is coming straight into your living room.
This isn't like a reggaeton DJ. DJing a fucking birthday party. This is a serious news channel, Roy. I don't want you undermining the nature of this breaking news.
Okay, I do apologize. Hopefully whatever plug we put in will be better than mine.
This is KLAS-TV, Channel 8 News, with George Knapp.
Good evening, Las Vegas. Tonight, we bring you a special report. Our guest, who will remain anonymous, has insider information about the mysterious facility we all know as Area 51.
Whoa.
That's right. A whistleblower was about to bust this whole thing open. The interviewee, going by the pseudonym Dennis, was questioned from the safety of the news van.
Weird pseudonym, but fine.
First name, Dennis. Last name, the menace.
He's about to be a menace to national security once he unveils some of this information.
He had his face silhouetted black against the bright light from a window behind him. Classic anonymous TV. I always find those shots funny when they're interviewing an anonymous source and they like black out their face or cast them in a dark shadow. It's like, don't film them.
Just don't do it then.
Just don't show that. Just play the audio. Like, it's fine.
Yeah, just put a picture of a question mark up there. We don't need to almost see them or see their head movements.
Like, if I was them and wanted to remain anonymous, I'd be pretty pissed that everyone knew I was wearing a polo shirt. I'd be like, don't fucking show my shirt.
Yeah, because you just know you're going to freak. Something's going to slip through the cracks. Your diploma's going to be on the wall behind you. Your freaking mom is going to knock on the door at one point and be like, Rory, chicken nuggets are ready. And you're like,
Mom, shut the fuck up. I'm trying to talk about Area 51.
Rory, the Domino's pizza delivery said they needed your address.
Fine. It's 75 Mulholland Drive. You guys can bleep that out.
It's actually live, Rory. Oh! I have in my possession, Rory, a clip from this very broadcast. Will we take a listen?
Let's do it.
Sir, how do we know you are who you say you are and that you actually have knowledge about what's going on at Groom Lake?
Well, I guess there's no way you could really know. There's really no way I can prove it without revealing my identity and getting myself into more trouble than I have already.
Exactly what's going on up there?
Well, there's several, actually nine flying saucers, flying discs, that are out there of extraterrestrial origin. And they're being test flown and basically just analyzed.
You say there's nine saucers. How are those tests going?
As far as what?
As far as whether they're successful and that sort of thing.
Oh, well, some of them are 100% intact and operate perfectly. The other ones are being taken apart. I was involved mainly in propulsion and the power source.
How did they come into the hands of the government?
I haven't the slightest idea, and you have to understand the information is very compartmentalized, and I was only allowed information that pertained particularly to what I was involved in.
But I mean, couldn't our government have made them as opposed to getting them from some alien beings?
Totally impossible. The propulsion system is a gravity propulsion system. The power source is an antimatter reactor. This technology does not exist at all. In fact, one of the reasons that I'm coming forward with this information, it's not only a crime against the American people, it's a crime against the scientific community, which I've been part of for some time, or actively trying to duplicate these systems, yet they are in existence now and basically in the hands of the government.
What would happen to you if the government learned that you were giving us this information?
Anything could happen. I don't know. It's I haven't the slightest idea.
Well, you said you referred to getting into trouble. Have you had some repercussions already?
Yeah, I've been threatened with being charged with espionage. I've had my life threatened by them, my wife's life threatened by them, and I mean, I don't know where else you can go from there.
Well, we want to thank you for joining us. Pretty interesting stuff you've got to say. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
That's a pretty bombshell interview to drop on a primetime news.
Wow. That is a lot, isn't it? It's a scary thing to be threatened by the people who are also in possession of alien spacecrafts.
You don't just have to worry about the sniper's red dot coming through your living room window one evening, but God knows, some kind of antimatter ray.
Yeah. You know, when those crafts were recovered, there was some sort of alien Glock in the glove compartment.
Some kind of alien baseball bat in the boot in case they got into some alien road rage incidents. These were serious and explosive allegations. He told the entire viewership of KLAS-TV that the US military was not only in possession of alien technology, but they were studying it in the hopes of reverse engineering it.
This is kind of a lot already. We're not really that far into this podcast and already the bomb has been dropped. I thought there was going to be, you know, some gradual escalation up to this point, but no, the fucking gloves are off. There's anti-gravity engines being hidden from the scientific community. This is insane.
You know, Rory, maybe I'm just doing a Tarantino here and showing you the ending before we go back to the beginning.
But but I ain't. Flash forward 50 years.
Flash forward 3,000 years. Dennis is erected from a cryo chamber. He's now the alien overlord of planet Zonktar.
The only part of that interview that kind of I thought was a little bit weird was when he was like, hey, look, they have all these crafts. They're flying these ships. This technology is real. And the guy is like, all right, well, couldn't this be technology from Earth? And without a beat, Dennis is like, totally impossible. Totally impossible, you moron. which is the only part I don't understand, because it's like, okay, I understand that that technology hasn't existed before on Earth, but if it does now exist on Earth, then there is a plausible reason that it could have been made by scientists on Earth, you know?
Absolutely. You can't rule these things out.
It's not a spell. It's not a fucking wizard spell that makes this thing fly. Then you could be like, we didn't make this. We didn't make this because I drank swamp water from a toad's mouth and the broom started levitating. But if you're like, it's science that makes this thing fly in the night sky, then I think you can say, sure, there's maybe a 2% chance that a scientist made this.
It's true. It's a bit like the origins of life itself when they talk about maybe life came from other planets because it's too crazy that it all happened here on Earth.
Yeah.
It's like, well, that doesn't really explain anything because you still have the problem of the life starting on the other planet.
Right, yeah. You're just kind of migrating the issues to the corners of the universe.
I like that you pointed out that they didn't even change his voice. They just blacked out his face.
That's he's playing a dangerous game here. Maybe Dennis wants to be caught.
Especially when he has such a recognizable voice.
He's also very, very specific about his job, where he works, and a lot of other details about his life. So I don't think they're going to have a problem hunting this guy down. He said in the interview, it's like, oh, they're already threatening me. They know who I am. So it was a bit weird that he didn't give away his identity. If anything, that would have probably protected him a little bit. Because he could be like, hey, look at this face. I'm telling you secrets right now. So if I'm dead in a week, you understand why.
That's very true. As you say, the people he's talking about here are the people who found Saddam Hussein, who was hiding in a hole in the Middle East somewhere. This guy isn't even hiding. He's going on national television. So shouldn't be too difficult to track him down.
He's going on a goddamn Las Vegas top of the charts radio station to leak
it's
secrets.
It's not a radio station. It's a TV show. You just don't know what the news is.
I've never watched the news in my life.
It's like fucking Top of the Pops. If instead of pop bangers, they were listing current events. Over time, the mysterious Dennis made a number of further claims. He told the press that at some point in the 1970s, extraterrestrials made contact with Earth. There was an exchange in which the US military walked away with a butt ton of alien spacecraft. That particular information was so closely guarded that even Dennis didn't know the terms of the encounter or precisely when it happened. Whether alien life reached out or if mankind took them by force also remains unknown.
Right, right. I thought it was maybe like he didn't know the terms of the deal, as in, like, was it keepsies? Was it for keepsies or was it just for like a weekend?
I don't think that's like a government or legal or military term for keepsies.
Like, you know, when you like trade Pokemon cards and you're like, that's for keepsies.
Right.
No trade backs, you know, those kind of like conditions. Pinky promise, do those kind of swears. A spit handshake, was it that?
I don't think aliens would understand Pokemon cards or a spit handshake. I don't think even humans understand a spit handshake.
Yeah, you're playing a dangerous game if you want to do a spit handshake with an alien.
That could be acid.
That could be fatal.
According to the popular movie series Alien, I think the spit is acid.
Okay.
I have to say, this twist of Dennis admitting how little he knows about these given situations is almost a unique aspect of a UFO story covered on This Paranormal Life. Does that make it more believable to you that he's like, look, they keep you in the f***ing dark about these things. I'm telling you the bit that I know.
Yes and no. Like, I think we've covered enough of these stories to understand that there are secrets within secrets with when it comes to, you know, the legends surrounding these types of organizations. But I don't know. It's all I'm going to say is it's pretty easy to be the guy making claims when you're not showing your face. That's what this whole podcast is about, for Christ's sake.
There's a reason we're a top of the charts radio station, guys, and not on the news.
If I had to show my face, every episode of this podcast would be a double no.
Dennis asserted that at least one of the ships in the hands of the government was from an archaeological dig, meaning this thing isn't just old, but properly ancient.
All right, that's a nonsense sentence you just said. What the f*** does that mean?
One of the nine ships they have
is old?
Ancient.
right, but then what's old? What does old mean? These aren't times.
Well, not 50 years old, not 100 years old. Try 1,000, bud.
Okay. All right. They're just very ambiguous terms.
I guess what he's pointing out is that...
And a few of them weren't just ancient. They were prehistoric. They were dusty. Borderline dusty.
One of these ships had a Tyrannosaurus Rex's chomp marks in the end of it. I think what he's pointing out is that he's telling the news this story in 1989, but the first contact that they made with the US government and aliens was in the 70s.
Got it.
But the contact with Earth from these aliens goes back even further, arguably, to ancient times.
Ancient aliens. Got it.
Maybe we're right. Maybe they didn't blur his voice enough, because before long, the press and the rest of the world would soon know that Dennis's real name was actually Bob Lazar.
Ooh, they got him.
Rory, Bob is a guy, like I say, we have talked about previously.
Yeah, he's come up on a few podcasts before. I don't remember which one specifically. Maybe you can remind us.
I believe we last talked about him 2.5 years ago, during our episode about storming Area 51.
Yes. Now, he's a similar character to Dr. J. Allen Hynek, who has appeared in many and many of our cases in the past. Bob is a little bit different, though, because I believe I haven't mentioned him once, and you have mentioned him several times. So I was quite excited today when I turned up to the studio and you tell me we're doing a two-parter on Bobby. If this is something you have to get out of your system, I'm absolutely here for it. I'm here for the ride. I cannot wait to hear about this dude's insane life.
Look, dude, we need a double yes. And if we have to do an 8-part series on the son of a bitch, we're going to do it. Bob Lazar, highly requested subject for this Paranormal Life episode from our listeners. An interesting one in the sense that when we started this podcast, he wasn't really on our radar. And then I believe it was somewhere around 2018, 2019, the Netflix documentary dropped. A few high-profile podcasts and interviews dropped. And interest in the story of Bob Lazar went through the roof. And I thought it was high time that we laid out that story in its entirety so that the audience can come to their own decisions about whether they think it's true.
I'm very excited. You know, I don't know a lot about the guy, so I'm very hyped today to hear about why we should care about Bob Lazar.
To understand how Bob, aka Dennis, came to have all this information, we need to go back in time to his origin story, a time when he zigged, when he maybe should have zagged, and his life was changed forever.
All right, what are we talking here? Are we talking baby boy? Are we talking little man, fresh out the womb?
Born in a test tube.
Okay.
On planet Zonktar. No, we're going to skip the first bit of his life.
That's fair.
Bob was a physicist with experience working on high-powered vehicles. He first put himself on the map in 1982 when he strapped a jet engine to his Honda, allowing it to reach speeds of 200 miles per hour.
Very impressive.
This is actually a clipping from a local newspaper where you can see his Honda.
What the hell? This is... The headline for this article says, LA man joins the jet set at 200 miles an hour. And it's a picture of him posing with his car, and it seems like there's some sort of rocket attached to the back of it.
It is it's a small car too, by the way. And not a car that should have a rocket attached to it. This story made local headlines, which you might expect. But what happened next was nothing short of miraculous. Just days later, Bob was on his way to hear a lecture from world-famous physicist Edward Teller, also known as the father of the hydrogen bomb. To be fair, at this stage, Bob is pretty much a prime candidate for someone the government should be keeping an eye on. A guy who straps a rocket to his car and then is going to talks from the guy who made the hydrogen bomb.
Yeah, if you're pulling up to that seminar in your rocket car, you're on a government list. You're a super villain.
He wouldn't have got away with this in the post 9/11 age, that's for sure.
Absolutely not. Yeah. There were different traffic laws. Although I am consistently blown away every time I go to America to see the vehicles driving around. Because here in the UK, there are incredibly strict tests that your vehicle has to pass for it to be eligible to be driven on the road. In the UK, it's called the MOT. Your car takes it, annually, I believe?
It's hilarious having to explain this concept to American listeners.
I've driven in LA and I have seen... It's like something out of fucking Mad Max.
Cars with no doors.
Yeah.
Cars with no wheels.
Dudes swigging and pouring gasoline into their exhaust from their mouths to fire up their engines. It's insane. So I don't think you'd be able to drive around a rocket car here in the UK. But maybe in the olden days of Los Angeles, yeah, why not?
It's absolutely bullshit, man. Authorities telling me I can't strap a rocket to my car. Nanny state gone mad.
Crazy.
He was already excited when he arrived at the venue, when, looking around, he spotted Dr. Teller sitting on a wall outside, reading a newspaper. He couldn't believe it. Dr. Teller was reading a local paper with the story about Bob and his Honda on the front.
Whoa!
He took a deep breath and approached Dr. Teller.
Hey, I'm the guy you're reading about there.
The pair had a quick chat, the kind of small talk that only rocket scientists can make. It was only a few minutes, but it remained in Bob's mind forever. I'm imagining that the kind of small talk that only rocket scientists can make is about how they're both absolute virgins.
Oh, hey, Dr. Teller, have you ever touched a boob before?
No, son, can you tell me anything about it?
All right, that's incredibly offensive. Do you know how much ass a guy with a rocket car would get if you're rocking up to the drag racing? You know, all these people have their souped-up cars. And you show up with a rocket Honda, the ladies are going to be pretty interested.
I would like to see Bob, who is pretty much exactly what you think this kind of scientist looks like. I'd like to see him in a kind of Fast and the Furious style drag racing meetup.
Yeah.
Racing Vin Diesel.
You know he'd have some sick burns as well. Like science burns. So everyone would just be calling him like a little weasel and a little geek. And he'd be like, oh, well, hey, Trevor. Is your penis dark matter? Because we think it exists, but no one can see it. Oh! And then he's like, so long, pussies! And then blasts off in his rocket car, frying 300 jocks behind him. Yeah.
Incinerating all the cars behind him. So, after their meeting, a few years down the line, when Bob found himself without a job, he contacted Edward Teller to see if he had any employment leads. Bob wasn't exactly expecting a response. After all, he didn't really know the guy. But not long afterwards, like fucking Harry Potter receiving a special letter from Hogwarts, a letter arrived detailing an advanced propulsion job working for the US government in a, quote, remote area.
Ooh, very cool. The letter was delivered by a rocket owl, which is exactly what you think it is.
You're a scientist, Bob.
He was intrigued and running seriously low on cash, so he jumped at his chance. He was subjected to several rounds of grueling interviews.
So, you must be Mr. Lazar. I'm the chief interviewer around here. Nice to meet you. Thanks for coming in.
Very nice to meet you too, officer.
Did I say you could f***ing talk back, son?
Well, no, but I... Of course... No, sorry, sir.
I'm just breaking your balls, son. You've done very well to make it to stage 5 of this grueling military interview scheme.
Thank you very much. I'm excited for stage 5 and 6 and beyond.
Did I say there was going to be another stage beyond this? Do you think you're getting through this today?
I'm sorry, officer. I mean, commander. What is your job?
Officer? I am a lieutenant, son.
Sorry, Lieutenant. No, you did not imply that there'd be any stages past stage number 5.
Sorry, I'm breaking your balls. I am also technically an officer, given that I'm the head interview officer here. Sorry, I get a little cranky first thing in the morning. I don't mean to be so. Anyway,
It's 4 p.m., sir.
Enough chit-chat. The interview starts now.
Sir, this is stage one, sir?
That's right. Stages one through five were simply a test to see if you could handle the sheer raw power of stage one.
I'm ready, Officer Lieutenant.
Tell me, son.
Yes? Yes? Yes?
That was worse. You can clear your throat. Those are some strange noises you're making, son. Do you need a glass of water?
Yes, please. Yes, please. Give me a second.
Rah! I splash it in your face. You drink when we tell you to drink. Anyway, back to the interview. Let me give you a scenario, son. You're in charge of an F-14 fighter jet, and you have tangos coming in from west, south, east, and north.
It's the only one left.
You've got exactly 3% fuel left. What evasive maneuvers are you performing?
3% fuel in what, 2%. Sir?
1%.
Fuel of in what, sir? In what side of kind of machinery is the fuel available?
You are out of fuel. You are officially out of fuel. The first question has been. Can someone note that down? It's been a failure. Okay, thanks, Mr. Lazar, for that answer. What kind of relationship do you have with your mother?
Well, sir, she's a complicated woman. Like that of any sort of woman, to be frank.
Someone write this down. He fancies his mom. Continue.
No,
continue,
please. I insist you strike that from the record.
You said she was hot or complicated or something?
No, I did say she was a complicated lady. Inspirational, I should have said. Inspirational. A driving force in the home life. And an inspiration to me in my work.
You want to be a freaking housewife? And you're sitting...
Well, no, her dedication to her craft, and she wasn't a housewife, sir. She actually ran a law firm, and she was a very successful woman.
Is that so? Can someone write all this down? He seems to be... He's been talking for about 5 goddamn minutes about his mom. You can't hear me doing those asides, can you, son?
Well, you're standing several feet away from me, sir.
Don't listen to our top-secret internal conversations. Christ alive.
Interviewee is a little eavesdropping bitch, sir.
I have but one more scenario to throw at you. You are on the battlefields of planet Geschmergen. Your entire unit has been shot down. You are a POW with an alien rifle pressed to the back of your goddamn skull. They take one look at you and they say, give us...
So they speak English.
Give us... not exactly true. You have an alien translating device in your ear at this point. I'm not getting into the details.
I wasn't aware some of this technology existed, sir.
It doesn't. Okay. It doesn't. They ask for the location of the President of the United States. Do you give it to them?
I wasn't aware that these were considerations I'd have to take into this job, but sorry, the name of this planet...
Wait, hold up. What job are you interviewing for?
Propulsion engineer for rockets.
Oh my God. Oh, wow. I am really sorry. Let me just check my notes. Oh, fucking hell. You already passed the interview about 3 stages ago. Come on in, son.
Well, hang on a minute now. What was this
for? Can someone neuralize this little fucker?
Well, what was...
Wipe his memories.
Sorry, did you say...
Take his clothes and burn them and wipe his fucking memories.
Geschmorgen?
Despite these impossible hoops to jump through, he was officially invited to join the team. He received a brief that his next step was to board a Janet flight. Janet is the secretive airline that services Area 51.
Wow. Now that's a real... Not that none of this other stuff is real. That is a real thing, right? There are like pilots and who have flown for Janet.
I didn't actually know this. Is this something you've come across?
I think I had come across it before where they're like, you know, even the people who work on the crafts or the airplanes, you know, have to be like debriefed. They're like, you cannot even talk about the people you see coming on and off these flights. It's a top secret kind of thing, which is pretty cool. I'm not going to lie.
That is nuts, isn't it?
What are the in-flight movies on Plane Janet? Is it just alien autopsies? You can choose from.
Yeah, it's really on the nose. Independence Day, Arrival.
Alien, just alien.
Upon arrival, he was asked to fill in form after form full of personal questions, inquiring about bizarre details.
Hello, Mr. Lazar. I have just a couple of questions for your medical profile.
Sorry, this is an American officer. Working at Area 51.
He was brought over during...
Operation Paperclip?
That's right.
Okay, proceed.
What is your weight, Mr. Lazar?
I am 150 pounds.
How many units of alcohol would you say you drink a week?
Golly, I would, including Listerine?
Not including Listerine.
Right. Well, there is alcoholic content in there, which can be soaked in through the bloodstream.
Okay, you smart little piece of shit. How many units of f***ing beer?
Well, I don't drink.
Do you smoke?
Nope.
Do you wipe sitting down or standing up?
Okay, that I don't. I fail to see the relevance of that question, but for the record, sitting down.
What do you call your mother? Mom? Mommy? Mama?
All right, well, I don't know anyone that calls their mother mama, but again,
just
I don't
the
see,
question.
Of course.
This is a very standard question.
Mother? Mother?
Whenever you go to Chipotle, what spice level of salsa do you order?
Mild.
How much can you bench, Mr. Lazar?
I've never attempted a bench press in my life.
What age did you first jack off?
Okay, I don't understand the relevancy of the question.
Tase the man. Tase him.
After 3 hours of laborious paperwork, Bob was granted a security clearance. Bob's like, did they have to print the fucking year I learned to jack off on the name tag? How is that relevant?
That's what all the numbers on the passes mean. I'm Colonel Michael, 13. Colonel Jameson, 12.
It was at this point a high-ranking uniformed officer came into the room.
This is Lieutenant Jenkins, 6. I have to warn you, Mr. Lazar, this is not a normal job. Now, I'd like you to follow me.
He led Bob outside to a bus.
You won't be working at this facility. Climb aboard and you'll be taken to S4.
S4? What the hell is S4?
Oh!
No questions. But if you must know, it's another base.
Why did you hit me then?
Oh!
No questions. But if you must know, you just have the kind of face you want to slap.
It turned out Bob wasn't going to be working at Area 51 at all, but another facility a few miles away that was somehow even more secret than Area 51.
Well, that's it, because we all know about Area 51.
How secret could it be?
Yeah.
S4 was built into the side of a mountain, like the Thunderbirds. It was made up of enormous concrete buildings and vast aircraft hangars.
Like the Thunderbirds.
As the bus arrived on site, Bob glanced into one of the cavernous warehouses and did a double take. There, as clear as day, was a flying saucer. He was even more surprised when the bus stopped and he was beckoned towards the saucer.
Whoa. Talk about it, diving in the deep end.
This is why they gotta be so, meticulous in their job interviews.
Right.
Because this is, you've opened the Pandora's box at this point. There's no going back.
Sure. Once you get to that stage, you gotta get cool about a lot of stuff real fast.
A wave of relief washed over him when he saw the craft had an American flag on the side. He thought to himself,
oh my God, this finally explains all of the flying saucer stories. This is just an advanced fighter. This is f***ing hilarious.
He approached it with his hand outstretched.
Don't touch that! Keep your eyes forward and your arms at your side and just walk in the door.
He was reprimanded before he could get too close. Perplexed, Bob leapt back and was ushered into his new office for the first time.
What is this little f***ing Willy Wonka test that he had to go through where they walk him through this little yard of temptations? And if he can make it through without stealing a UFO or a little alien artifact, then he gets to actually work there. Like, don't drop him off. Don't make the doors of the bus open onto an alien craft parked right in front of him and then get upset when he goes over to it.
Yeah, the bus driver's like, don't leave the hangar doors open. It's supposed to be top secret, guys. F***ing hell. Like, sorry, chief, there was a bad smell. We wanted to air the place out.
Yeah, that's hilarious. A hilarious moment if you got off the craft and you're like, you walk in the front door and you're like, there's like aliens standing in front of you conversing with each other, like, and you're like, wow, they're just so open about all this stuff here. And the colonel comes in and is like, what? Get those f***ers out of here. You didn't see anything, Bob.
The aliens like stub out a cigarette on the ground, run away. Inside, there were unusual objects littered around the room, components of engines the like of which he'd never seen before. At this point, Bob was getting really weirded out. He was an advanced physicist. How did the military have technology of this nature, and why had they kept it under wraps? Not only would he soon have answers to his questions, but his life would be changed forever by what he had seen.
Okay, men, we have a new member of the team. Welcome to S4, Lazar. It goes without saying that everything you witness here is of the utmost secrecy, especially what I'm about to show you now.
Another soldier wheeled in a cart adorned with a metal hemisphere around the size of a basketball sliced in half. It was fixed to a metal plate. Bob didn't have a clue what he was looking at. The commanding officer went on to demonstrate how the bizarre object worked.
Check this shit out.
To Bob's utter amazement, it was a tiny reactor. When it was switched on, it was able to produce a gravitational field of its own. This went against everything he knew.
What does that mean? Like, things started floating around it? Or objects that were put into its circulation were stuck to the orb?
Weirdly, it seems to be the opposite. The others encouraged him to try and touch the sphere. Bob went up, reached forward, leaning in with his whole body weight and all his strength. But no matter how hard he tried, his fingers couldn't make contact. He felt they were being pushed away with great force.
We can't just make gravity. The only way to produce a gravitational field is with an object of enormous mass. Like a planet. No machine could achieve such a feat.
Gentlemen, as you can see, we're in possession of some immense technology here. Your task is to pick it apart and tell us how it works. And ultimately, how we can go about making our own.
The reality of what he'd signed up for finally hit him. There was no other explanation. This was alien technology, and it was up to him to replicate it. The mission was given the codename Project Galileo, and they were only getting started.
Wow.
And to find out what happened in the rest of the story of Bob Lazar, you will have to tune in for next week's episode of This Paranormal Life.
Oh, a two-parter. What a cliffhanger as well.
I think you can see why people wanted us to cover this one.
Yeah.
It's such a rich, detailed, and recent supposed UFO story.
Yeah, and I mean, if this is the first half, this guy has a very interesting career. If we're only halfway now, and he's already looking at anti-gravity objects that came from another planet.
No wonder he's an interesting guy. He walked out of university and strapped a rocket engine to a Honda. What part of that did you not get? So I hope you enjoyed this first foray into the early half of his story. I hope you join us again next week for the second half and kind of taking us up to, weirdly, the present day. Thank you to everyone who has suggested this story over email over the last couple of years. Thank you to Amy Grisdale for researching this episode and to Cami Toman for editing it. It feels strange to not jump into conclusions and our thoughts about the whole thing, but I think we can save that for next week.
Yeah, yeah. We need to hear all of the facts and all of the information and all the story before we can come to a conclusion.
Of course, if you cannot wait until next Tuesday to get your fix of This Paranormal Life, you guys know the score. Over on patreon.com/thisparanormallife, we have approximately 50 full-length bonus episodes. Full-length investigations into the paranormal, which are some of our weirdest, wackiest, and funniest ever.
Maybe we'll just put part two up there.
I don't know. We'll do part one
and build up this whole thing, build up this whole ramp. And it's like, you want to find out what happens?
Right.
Now you got to pay us, f***er.
I don't know. I feel like, well,
now you got to toss us some coins.
Don't be mean to them. I think people might not take kindly. If we were to paywall.
Well, they've been getting a lot of free shit for quite a while, it seems like. And we gave them part one, right? We gave them the sandwich. We gave them the bread.
They're getting weirdly mercenary about
this. We just hold the meat.
It's fine. We've got some really great content over there.
Check it. Like part two.
Big investigations. As good as part two, yeah. But not including part two. Don't worry, that'll be free.
When do I get my rocket car, huh? When does Rory get his rocket Honda?
So it's about money.
Of course it's about money! Rockets are expensive, I think. I haven't looked yet.
I guess we might as well talk about money. It costs $5 to unlock our Patreon.
Sure, sure.
Approximately, pending your local currency. And that unlocks instantly all of those episodes.
And what is a rocket? 20, 25? I haven't looked into it yet,
what,
but it's
dollars?
Gotta be. Yeah.
More like $1,000.
Really? Shit. Okay.
Sorry. Did I say 1,000? I meant million. 25 million.
You can afford to strap a firework to your bicycle and see what happens.
You can afford to Jackass style sellotape a sparkler to your nutsack and see if that gets you in the local paper.
All right. Well, please join the Patreon over on patreon.com so I can afford at least a decent firecracker to duct tape to my nutsack.
That just about wraps it up for today's episode. We hope to see you next Tuesday for part two. Thank you for tuning in. And remember to, in the meantime, live fast,
investigate, and die young, baby.